All right, we are live. Welcome to another episode of Roasting Marshmallows. My name is Rolf Sud and I'm your host. We've been talking about Agile a lot on this podcast, and today is no exceptions. Most companies choose Scrum as a framework to adopt the Agile mindset, but face challenging scaling this up to many teams. Since 2001, Agile development and Scrum in particular have revolutionized software development. But when asked how to apply Agile development to large groups, many people say, just don't, or just use a small team, or maybe even do Scrum at the team level. This is why large-scale Scrum, or LESS, was developed. LESS requires you to follow a set of rules, and to help us make sense of these rules, we have Viktor Grgic as our guest today. Viktor is a software developer, Agile coach, and a certified LESS trainer with 17 years of experience in delivering enterprise systems and helping organizations with Agile transformations. He writes papers, blogs, and provides classes on the subject of IT architecture and Agile. Also, Viktor speaks regularly on conferences and other gatherings. Hailing all the way from Hong Kong to gather around the fire to roast some marshmallows with us, welcome, Viktor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So great to be on this podcast.
Yeah, thanks. I've been to Hong Kong once on a stop to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty nice. It was not that hot, but it was definitely very warm. The thing that amazed me the most about Hong Kong was the amount of weapon shops there, like the amount of guns you can buy. Do you need like permits and stuff?
Oh yeah, but you've been in probably in a very specific street, I think I remember which one. As far as I know, it's not even allowed to have those guns. I'm not sure. They are. It's a very special shop. Not many of them. I think the same rules applies in Netherlands or most of the countries, except maybe Switzerland, which is a different story. But yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. It was just a thing that really stood out for me from Hong Kong.
But the things I see around.
Yeah. So, and we have one more scout here in the show today. Sylvester, welcome. All right.
Sorry, Victor.
All right. Yep. Yeah,
I think that's the gist of it. If
so,
I look at safe friends,
I've mentioned a little bit in the introduction that LESS promotes itself as large scale Scrum, but Viktor, could you maybe explain a little bit what, in a nutshell, what is LESS and what does it, what kind of benefits does it provide? What problem does it solve?
What problem does it solve? The first problem it solves or helps to solve, it doesn't actually solve by itself, it just guides you to solving it, is to simplify the organizations. And a major aspect that everybody who tries to introduce LESS encounters is that is that you must change your organization. That's actually the very purpose of it, and to simplify the organization. And improves agility. So what does it actually mean concretely? So helps to improve agility. So it helps to optimize an organization for focusing on the most important all the time. So for example, typically large organizations have many, many projects and they're running all kinds of things to try to deliver at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the organization which says, I want to do less, makes a choice to focus on the much more on the most important and much less on less important stuff. And in that process, obviously, if you say this is the most important, let's focus on that, will change, obviously. So at one point in time, one thing is most important. You want to get value from that. But a little bit later, it's going to be something else more important. And so the organization needs to be able to turn on a dime for a dime, as we say. So the whole organization can from one moment focus on one thing and suddenly can focus on something else. Well, you can try to do that in any organization, but the cost of doing that and the waste is massive. So LESS helps you to simplify the organization in such a way and optimize it that the cost of switching of the focus because things need to be focused on something else is much lower.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how does an organization start out doing less? Is it something you can like experiment on a little bit, or because you said like you have to transform the entire organization, like is it an either you do or you don't kind of thing?
So you definitely don't want to do in one go over the whole organization. Okay. There are some which have tried to do that. It didn't work out. It failed quite badly.
Okay.
And typically this happened in the summer. Typically the fintech type of organizations, which are pretty new, or Silicon Valley organizations, and they think they can change the stuff really fast. So and when we say change, what exactly are we focusing on? The whole organization or a certain part of it? Well, it's more part of it, meaning that you talk about the mainly product development part of the organization. This involves okay. all aspects related to product development. But for example, if you're a bank and you have an operations department, which makes sure that people who day-to-day settle the payments and stuff, etc., those are typically not included or simply users and users how mm-hmm. they organize themselves within organization. Those are not included.
Okay. And it's about product development. So you have multiple teams working on one product, I think. Mm-hmm. But what if you have, let's say, an app and a website? Like, can you then have two separate less streams, or is it still considered one product?
It most likely considered one product. And okay. If you say a website and an app, and those website and app do similar or things which are actually very connected to each other, mm-hmm. then it's in that case it's most probably it's a one product.
Okay.
Yeah. So that technology doesn't define, use technology doesn't define whether something is a product or not a product.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because less is like large scale Scrum, so I imagine it has a lot of similarities to Scrum. But maybe can you point out like what are there any differences with Scrum, or like certain things that less does totally different compared to Scrum?
Yeah, we'll definitely explain. I remember that I didn't fully answer your question regarding the do you start small or not. You start with this with a maximum of about 50 people, and then you go deep with those 50 people, make sure there's a real change, really things are simplified, and then you mm-hmm. Spread to the next group after, I don't know, 3 to 6 months or whatever. Depends whether it's stabilized or not. Yeah.
Okay.
So getting to the difference with the Scrum, differences, there are actually quite a few differences with Scrum if you look okay. at the Scrum guide. And one of the differences I opened up, even there is a page on a website, I can't remember all of the differences actually from the top of my head, so I'm gonna kind of a sneak peek. So sure. the one thing which is the there is no Scrum team concept in Less, and we just have teams. And there is a product group, and which can consist of many, many teams, but there is no Scrum team. There is so the concept of team corresponds more or less with the development team in Scrum guide. And okay. so that's another difference. And then we have in Scrum now changed from self-organized to self-managing. Before it was a difference with less, now it's not the difference anymore, because the self-organizing term is not really well-defined, while self-managing term is quite well-defined, actually. So with less has been using always self-managing team as a concept. Sprint planning is split into sprint planning 1 and sprint planning 2. In Scrum is a kind of a part 1, part 2. In less is really two different things. But what happens in sprint planning is not really different. It's basically the same. Okay. And backlog refinement is an event, not activity. So it's a must do. In Scrum, it's not really a must do. Then a sprint goal is not really part of less, but it's a advised practice, but it's not really a must-do practice. So that's also a difference. And Scrum Master is a full-time role, not a member of a part-time or something like that, or a member of mm-hmm. a team. So it's a product owner is doesn't need to be in daily Scrum or retrospectives or something like that. So these are the differences. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you, yeah. Yeah. So if you talk about the actual framework, it's the only thing which is in addition to Scrum when it comes to events and things which are really part of the framework. The only addition is the overall retrospective. That's the only extra thing. That's it. When you talk about the framework. So if I put in perspective of comparing the frameworks to each other, then it's almost a non-discussion, because there is in the Less community, the framework part is almost irrelevant. It's just a kind of a practical thing. It's a practical tool. Not much attention is spent on a framework. In fact, there are quite a few Less adoptions which don't even follow fully the framework. And sometimes it can be a okay thing. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could summarize basically Less the key message or key body of knowledge of Less is what we call that's actually not really coming even from Less, but it's Less is using that is systems thinking, lean thinking, and organizational tools, and so these are the three major aspects. So those organizational tools, especially they are also confirmed by the rules, by the framework. Such as, for example, the Less rules, which state that you almost all teams should be feature teams, there is a single product backlog and a single product owner, etc. And it's gonna be funny when people then start to listen to this. It's incomparable to each other. This is actually quite important. And the Less and Safe are not comparable to each other. The problem is that in the naming, when you look at the naming and when you kind of look at superficially, it seems to be solving the same problem. But as soon as you go deeper and understand both of them a bit more, you notice they are solving completely different problems. Completely different problems. And it happened to, in the name and description, to be called Agile Framework and Scaled Agile Framework. That's about it when it comes to similarity. And so you see, when you see the content and all the terminology, it seems to be very similar. But in reality, it's really incomparable. And I especially notice this in when coaching companies, which nowadays more and more companies which call us Less trainers and coaches, they are basically already had a Safe experience, and which is considering popularity of Safe quite natural. And they discover it didn't really change much. And if anything, and then and it become a really kind of a situation of almost a disaster. The things are just simply not get delivered still, and they want to now make a real change, and they are really in an urgent situation to make this change. And then we have a discussion, and then I say to them, let's have a training first. And they quite often think they already had so many of these agile trainings, and yet another one. And until they have the training and they notice, we talk about an almost entirely different thing. The way of thinking is entirely different. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that's, let me react to that in a more neutral way. There is a still ongoing debate that assuming this is still here, the camera is off. So the still ongoing debate that what exactly Agile is and what it means, and so that debate just doesn't seem to ever end. And then it becomes much easier. I get distracted by the fact that you, Sylvester, and off and off.
And sorry, I'm no having problem. Technical issues. I'm blaming Apple here.
Okay.
But my laptop suddenly just disconnected. I'm not sure why.
Yeah. So then what happens is that the discussion about the Agile or not Agile doesn't really give any new information. And instead, we should ask what exactly the organization wants to optimize. And then and once we start to explain what exactly do you want to optimize, how does the end goal look like, and then we're getting somewhere. And then we start to have a more clear definition what exactly do we want to achieve, regardless of if it's called Agile or not Agile. And
the outcome is Agile, but you're stepping away from the whole discussion. What is Agile? And,
correct. You need to kind of dig into more specifics about what exactly do you optimize.
Okay.
And, you know, going over the less rules, I noticed that there is a single product owner for the product. And, you know, the standard implementation of less says about like maximum of 8 teams. I've been in teams, like I've been in one team that has one product owner, and still that product owner sometimes does not have time for me. So how is a product owner supposed to serve 8 teams with priorities and questions and all this stuff, making decisions?
Can you give me an idea about what is product owner mostly spending time on for you?
So the product owner usually is able to, you know, talk to me, but like when I have a question, this product owner always has to go to stakeholders to get an answer. And then, you know, she or he is like busy in meetings, talking with these stakeholders. And then, you know, I have to send emails when I'm building a feature because I might have a question that we did not really, you know, that did not pop up during the refinements maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just having like a day to day or every other day trying to have some contact with the product owner. And sometimes, they just don't have the time or the ability to answer me. And that is just for one team. But what if a product owner has to do it for 8 teams? I can imagine it's a lot of work.
Yeah, both in Scrum and in Less. In Scrum is no really different. The idea is that the developers work together directly with the stakeholders and business people, not with the product through the product owner. So if you have questions, it should be the developers themselves engage with the stakeholders and users and to get those questions answered. So refinement essentially is activity is where mainly the stakeholders, the right people from the business that should be served or users or whatever the context is, sit with developers, and where the developers are in a proactive mode, and those people, subject matter experts, like I call them, they are in a passive mode, and you are pulling out information very, very actively as a development team. And that's not a work or product owner, never has been actually.
But why is it always assumed? Because like at a lot of these refinements, these people are not there, these stakeholders. Like, why is it so hard for companies to get that part right? Because you said it's not just less, it's also regular Scrum that kind of requires that.
Yes, correct. The reason why it happens is the organizational setting and where they're coming from when they introduce Scrum or less. So who becomes typically product owner? Well, it's either a business analyst or some senior business analyst or a team leader that was previously or a project manager sometimes. And so this kind of a stuff happens. So assumption often is there. We have we had this way of working where you guard the requirements and then bring them to the teams. And now that needs to be done every 2 weeks. And previously it was maybe longer. And so the and this Scrum thing talks about the product owner, and we have a business analyst. Well, it seems kind of logical that this person should be the product owner. And then what happens is they basically retrofit or things don't really change that much from how it used to actually previously work. You just now have a product owner.
And, same positions, but different titles.
Correct. Yeah. And on top of that, it's quite a big change for developers themselves, I notice. And this is a quite painful thing. Majority of developers still today, despite all the Agile and Scrum, et cetera, think their job is to look at the screen and write the code. But it's not
for the best.
But it's not. In 2021, the job of a developer is to solve the customer problem. And the first part and part of your job, the core part of your job, is to understand customer's problem.
Yeah.
And you should be spending a significant amount of time of doing that and before you start to actually solve the problem. And and then verifying, did you actually solve the problem? So that you learn from it and can improve. That's basically the whole idea. But most of the developers in large companies still even actually fight for to keep staring at the black intelligence screen. I'm a developer myself also. And nothing wrong with that. I understand fully why that happens. One, it's fun to always build code and stuff. Yeah. And second, you don't want to deal with all the shitty stuff around you.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I've seen the reverse. Right? We've been coaching quite a few teams, and what I've seen quite a lot is actually you see people coding, right, and loving to code and having fierce discussions about whatever technology or framework to use, because apparently that's important. And if you start introducing practices like, continuous delivery, continuous deployment, maybe they actually start to trigger, hey, what I'm doing here has an effect on the outside world. It's actually something that matters, right? I'm working here, and if I commit and I see something happening, then a customer can actually, it can either do something new or face a bug or whatever, but I feel more connected to the end scenario. So I'm not sure people are looking for, hey, I just want to code. I think they simply don't know. It's actually more fun to be involved in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's you're probably right. So let me correct myself a little bit. So what happens is when you ask developers in a shitty environment to do that, to actually be considerate about end-to-end, then they say quite often, no, just let me code. That's the most efficient thing to do. I want to be productive. This is the statement that I get to hear. But they don't really mean that. And that's what you explained, Sylvester. I'm a developer myself, and I see around me actually continuously being confirmed. If you put aside all the shitty stuff and politics surrounding in a company, there's just simply way more satisfaction as a developer to see end to end being delivered and confirmed that is some things what I built actually used, and it's just more satisfactory. Yeah.
Yeah, and we had a podcast with Teresa Torres a while back where she talked about product discovery, and she really advocated having like interviews with customers, trying to understand what it is, like what problem do they have, and how can we solve these issues for them. And I could also remember being quite surprised after reading a book that she also encouraged developers to do that, because like in my 15 or 16 years of software engineering, I think I've spoken to a customer like 4 or 5 times in total, which is, you know, you don't really think much about it as an engineer, because you think like what you said as well, like I just need to code and build stuff and then, you know, they'll be happy. But it is pretty amazing that, you're making stuff for people, but you never actually spoke once to these people. And then how can you pretend to know what to build for them? So I fully agree that we as developers should also be talking to customers, even if these customers might be complaining at one point, you know? So I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, it's one of the 12 principles, Agile principles, by the way, and which says business people talk directly with the customers. Developers talk to directly with business people and solve the problem, something like that. I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. So another topic that I wanted to address is that, I looked a bit at the less rules. And one of the things that stood out to me as well is that there is multiple retrospectives as well. And the one that I had a question about is the overall retrospective. Because if each team has their individual retrospective about how to make things better, what does an overall retrospective add to that process, and
who will pull that card.
Yeah, so the when the teams have their own retrospectives per team, they can discuss systemic issues which are mm-hmm. concerning to multiple teams and HR policies, structure, all that kind of stuff. But it's a bit pointless to do that within a one team because you can't influence that much. So typically, teams should actually be quite practical in a retrospective. You can discuss certain things, but mm-hmm. Don't spend too much time discussing something which can't influence anyway. So so that's what you do on a team level. You discuss stuff which you can influence, which is within a team, and somewhat stuff which is related directly to you as a team outside. Okay, so... But as soon as you start to touch stuff which are concerning multiple teams, such as, for example, you still have individual performance reviews, and that demotivates people quite a lot or motivates them to do weird things, let's put it that way. And so should you be discussing this within a team? Good luck with that if you discuss within a team. Maybe a team should discuss with HR, and HR says, you, one team, want that. So it's in the overall retrospective, the people sitting there are management, product owner, representatives from teams, and Scrum Master. Mm-hmm. And they are looking at systemic issues. Typically, they discuss stuff which is really hard and which requires typically multiple retrospectives just to discuss single thing. And so, for example, let's take a performance reviews. It's a pain. Everybody feels that. But what do you do then if you don't do performance reviews? How do you decide salaries? How do you? And so there's you need to have some kind of experiment regarding that. You need to discuss the effects of that within the context of the company and culture, etc., etc. So this requires multidisciplined. Perspective. So meaning from a perspective from a manager, perspective from a product owner, perspective from a representatives from teams, Scrum Master, and they bring in these perspectives and the knowledge, mix it together, and they typically do systems modeling, so systems thinking, to discuss this kind of stuff very deeply, and to come up with an experiment, with a suggestion, which they then try to implement.
And, okay.
Yeah.
And the input comes from the representatives of the teams then?
It could be. It doesn't need to be. It can be anybody from that group, essentially. Okay. So the focus is very much the system. In that meeting, generally, almost nothing is discussed which considers teams only. So if one team has a debate with another team and they have some kind of a conflict between teams, those teams should sit together and not really discuss this in a overall retrospective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
We recently, actually, last episode, we had a discussion about retrospectives. I'm not going into that right now. But one thing that does pop up with me within Less, or it's a mimic of Scrum or a partial Scrum. Do you still estimate stories, and how do you deal with that? Do you measure velocity, for instance?
So the estimate stories, yes, commonly still do that. Why do we estimate stories? It's just simply a nice tool to help you to confirm whether you understand each other well enough, whether did you actually do proper refinement or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the reason. And and so after that, then you have a nice number, which especially if you do estimation across teams, becomes normalized. So the number means more or less the same thing, whether it's done on one team or another team. So once you have that, you can then indeed do stuff like a velocity and planning, which standard stuff that we typically also know in Scrum. So, but this is not done per team. So it's pointless to have a velocity of a team. It's useless information. So what you have is a velocity of the product.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say it sounds pretty dangerous. Oh, well, maybe not dangerous. That's not the right word. But if you have like multiple teams working on the same product and doing these kinds of estimations, then I think it's easy for management to start comparing these teams together, right? Like, oh, this team is on 24 and this team is on 32. And what's the difference?
Yeah.
Exactly, and I could imagine the overall retrospective actually take that into account. Hey, what team isn't performing well? I'm not saying I agree with it, right? Don't get me wrong. From my perspective, I don't think estimates would actually add anything, but okay. So, but how is the estimation then actually working? Because basically you get delegates from every team and together they estimate a story.
Oh, wait. So the estimation doesn't happen over a retrospective. That happens in a multi-team refinement, generally.
Okay.
So during refinement, just like in Scrum, you clarify the stories, you split them up, you write acceptance criteria, and then you estimate. So this is kind of like this is how it's also happening less, but in a multi-team refinement. Mm-hmm. And so this is basically the full team is present there.
So everyone. Yes, so let's say you have 50 people, they're all there, and they're discussing and debating stories. Ah, okay, yes, that I kind of like, because I was thinking if someone isn't there, and then your colleague estimates it, I don't know, it's 5 points or something, you say, well, hell no, it's 20. But it's going to be an interesting discussion.
Yeah correct. Because why is everybody there? You want to be efficient, ironically. So, I mean, what happens if you have just a few people, that those few people are going to bring the knowledge to others, and then you need to spend another time, and then this is misunderstood and get, and et cetera, et cetera. You get the point. So it's more efficient to have everybody in a room every 2 weeks, and then you split into groups, and you don't you avoid talking too much single person to everybody. You don't do that. So if you need to do it, it's very short in the beginning, like, I don't know, 50 minutes. And then... after that, you split into groups, and several groups work in parallel with each other. Each group has like, I don't know, 4 or 5 people, whatever. And they work on stories, which are typically on the walls. And in the digital world, that's mirror, and you have breakout rooms, etc.
But if you have a multi-team refinement, does everyone in the room has to understand each and every story? Like, don't you have endless questions about every single story?
Yeah, no. So the stories need to be refined, which means that there is a group of people which understand the story during the refinement.
Yeah.
And typically, at least one or few people are going to be in that group, which are going to be also in a team to deliver that story. And and so they have the information. They and that the information also representing the stories and acceptance criteria. And so they don't need to participate in discussion when it's being split up. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So another thing that I saw was, you're going to have one definition of done, or at least like there's a product-wide definition of done, but then each team is allowed to make that definition of done a bit more strict. Like you can loosen it, but you can make it more strict. Am I... correct so far?
Kind of. So the one definition of done is the minimum that everybody needs to comply with.
Exactly.
And some teams manage to deliver in a one sprint integration test, which was previously considered not really possible to do it. How did they do it? Well, they automate. And they use this automation for integration test. And then once they achieve this, they're going to talk about it in an overall retrospective and show the other teams how to do that. And then other teams say, that's interesting. We also want to be able to do that. Okay, great. Now, let's everybody does that. And now suddenly, definition of done was this level and got a little bit up. And,
But don't you have the issue that if a team give themselves like a more strict definition of done, that they might delay the entire sprint for the product? Like, do you get like failed releases because one team thought they were smarter than the rest and said like, we're going to have a little better definition of done, and then like they're screwing up the cadence? Or is that not something that you see in real implementations?
If a team says we have an extended definition of done, it means they are able to deliver within the same sprint extra work for an item.
Right.
And so if they are not able, then they don't have definition of done. So you cannot screw things up, because the very thing that you say it's extended definition of done is a definition of done, unless it is nothing more than an ability of a team to achieve something. So ability of how good you are as a team to achieve something. That's what definition of done essentially is.
Okay.
Yeah. So could you give me an example? Because I'm trying to wrap my brain around this. Yeah. So you have the definition of done and an extended definition of done. And the extended definition of done will be a team does the extra mile to prove, well, to improve or to show something new to the other teams. Am I understanding correctly?
Not really. Let's take an example. Another example, performance test. So performance test is considered something that you don't really do within a sprint because it's hard to do a performance test. And then one team says, you know what, we have to improve. We should improve performance test. That's clear. Okay, that should be actually part of the definition of done, just like lots of other stuff. We see potential to actually include performance tests as a part of the definition of done. So how do we do that? We spend some time to automate that, and that you can simply run a performance test, which runs over the night, and we can do that in essence every single night. And that's what we implement. One team decides to do that. And so they automatically improved a capability to deliver something that way. Mm-hmm. And then they share this knowledge or the tools or the code, whatever, with other teams, which then can also use the same thing to then also comply with this extended definition of done, which means that this extended definition of done becomes the default definition of done.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what if they don't make it? Like they say, like, oh, we think we should be able to do it. Let's try to do it this sprint. And then what if they don't make it?
It means that you just consider it's not done, the extended definition of done. As long as they comply with the default definition of done, and then they try to do this extra mile, and this extra mile didn't work out, that's okay.
Okay.
It means that the performance test still needs to be done, but later on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. And so I've never had the privilege to be in a organization where they did less. How many organizations do you promote less in? Like how widespread is it? Is it because like I said, I've never seen it in real life before. Is it maybe me just being at the wrong companies, or is it just not that widespread?
Now comes to kind of like a, almost like with the politics, living in a bubble. So for me, it's only less basically.
And, of course.
Yes. And not one company, many companies. And so quite a few. And so quite busy, actually, quite full with that. And it's. I know the reality is that overall, if I look at an outside of my bubble, less is not that widespread at all. So the countries where it's more widespread is Netherlands, surprisingly.
Okay.
And I simply noticed that on amount of work for coaches and trainers, which I know pretty much all of them, and they're not that many. And you notice Netherlands is quite large. East of Europe, Russia and many other Eastern European countries is quite large. Now Germany is picking up quite a lot. US start to be now recently.
Okay.
We noticed that in requests for trainings and stuff, etc. Asia, it's almost me only. And there was Bas Foda before. And Louis in China is very busy. So So yeah, but China is big, so only one person, which basically a trainer there.
Well, it's a large market, right? Opportunity, I would say.
Yes. There is more than enough work.
Are there any like super well-known companies that you happen to know do less?
BMW, autonomous driving.
All right, cool.
I was the trainer there and coach.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty large. Big name for sure.
Yes, that's huge, yeah.
And you said previously Bas Foda, he's kind of like the one of the initiators of LESS, correct?
Yeah. I used to be living in China and Singapore and now lives in Netherlands. So
Oh, but he's still involved with LESS.
Of course, yeah.
I figured, hey.
Yeah, but he spent most of his time just writing code, by the way. So if you try to approach him, he says, I'll come back to it when I finish fixing a bug, says, and this kind of stuff.
That's
and,
the mindset.
And Yeah, so we've been talking about less a lot, but less comes in like two flavors, right? Because there's also less huge.
Yeah.
And
of course, the easy question would be like, can you explain that a little bit? But because normal less is for around 50 people, or is that also the upper limit, or is it more about the amount of teams? And because I read there's like 8 teams, which is kind of like the limit for less. So anything above that, it automatically needs to become less huge.
Yeah. The reason for less huge is the product ownership, essentially. And that's the main reason. It's for one product owner, to coming back to the first discussion about the product owner, how can product owner deal with so much stuff? Well, there is a limit to how many teams one product owner can deal with.
Right.
And which is about 8, which translates into amount of items in a backlog and how much that changes all the time. And mm-hmm. so at some point you have a backlog for 8 teams, I don't know, 120 items or something. More than that means that your backlog is just too long. And but that 120 is going to be such a frequently be changing that you, after that number, it becomes hard to actually keep track of what the heck is going on. So you cannot really do your job properly anymore. So what do you do then? Then you introduce area product owner as somebody who looks at a single backlog, but looks at a subset of the backlog, and then behaves as the product owner for the teams, and which is then still up to 8 teams again.
Yeah.
And so the number of area product owners that you can have, we still haven't found the limit. So you can literally have 40, 50, 60, 80 teams, 100 mm-hmm. teams, and still have a single product owner. But then you have a bunch of area product owners which assist us and behave as the product owner towards the teams.
Yeah.
And but you still have a single product owner, a single backlog, to kind of have that in a mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And is that also something that you see getting applied a lot, less huge, or is the regular less more widespread?
That's a good question. So I don't have the numbers, mm-hmm. but what I notice is that less huge is quite common, simply because organizations are large and they don't have many products. Like mm-hmm. let's take an insurance company. How many health insurance? How many products does a health insurance company have? Well, one, health insurance.
Yeah,
that's it. And so, but how large is health insurance company? Well,
it can be pretty big.
2,000 people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you,
How does the sprint review? How does the sprint review work for 2,000 people then?
Yeah, I'm also trying to wrap my head around this.
Yeah.
But okay.
So the review happens commonly per area, so it doesn't happen for all together. Nevertheless, sprint review at BMW, for example, this I can talk about it mm-hmm. because it's also published and stuff, is how it happens is that you have a bunch of cars in front of the building and the software is updated in those cars by the feature teams. And then stakeholders, wherever, can drive themselves to the airport and back in Munich, and then they can feel how a car behaves. And the real driver is a developer on the back seat, which has a stop knob, stop button, and to make the car again normal car, and if something doesn't go well. So that's a sprint review. Is it a useful one? No, really. It's a more kind of like a show off than it's actually really useful. So the real sprint review in that case is a simulation. So so they have a simulator which is very powerful, and they basically run the software against the simulator, and then they see how the software behaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Hey, and I know you're wholly into less, right? But have you also looked at alternatives of doing this? And I'm not talking about safe, right? I think we both agree, okay, that's not really an alternative for doing this. Yeah. But for instance, a few sessions ago, we had a pretty nice talk as well with Niels Vlaging, and he's from Beta Codex, and kind of like, okay, you shouldn't do this, right? Everything should be distributed, and, well, people should work in kind of like autonomous teams with every discipline that you need to do the work. And a lot of this, what I'm reading, actually, well, it connects one-on-one, what we heard there and what we read in the books. Have you also looked at stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm very busy to explore all kinds of different approaches, and especially the one which has kept me busy for now quite some time is the microservices-based approach, where each team is kind of independently working on a bunch of microservices from other teams, and they have their own then backlog, but they are customer-centric. And but then I concluded this is not thought out properly, and so this kind of approach. And so this is just to give an example, and but it's very interesting to explore to see that. And quite a few companies are going this way, and they get stuck, and so it doesn't really work properly because of the you have a shared components, you have platform stuff, you have all kinds of stuff. How can you split things between teams? You still have to collaborate. All that stuff. It's a very interesting subject to explore deeply from a systems thinking point of view. So I found it interesting and spent lots of time doing that, especially because I used to be a SOA architect, as you know, Sylvester. And so
I know.
Very funny to call it in Dutch, which means sexually transmittable disease. Anyway, so
it's kind of similar, but yeah.
And basically the same problems that we used to have, and I spent years and years being a SOA architect, now gets repeated again and all the mistakes again. So. Why do I mention that, and I don't mention Scrum at Scale or this kind of a stuff or a Nexus framework or etc.? Because those frameworks, there's really by learning about the framework itself and by learning about what the framework says or something like that, there isn't that much to learn from. And I noticed. And so at some point, we also quite often talk about apples and oranges, like a safe and less. And and then discussion becomes every single discussion that I participate about comparison of the frameworks, I really don't learn anything from it. And I have looked at it, but I looked at more in a concretely what it means in reality, what is exactly optimized. So, for example, in safe, I kept asking, so what do you optimize for in safe? And I couldn't really get a clear answer. So everybody talks about something different, and it seems like they're solving all problems of the company or something other. So it's unclear to me. And I just
couldn't get good marketing. Yeah.
So they are solving anything that the company is asking for. Yeah, that's interesting. In that sense, less is completely different. Less is solving the problem which typically company don't ask for, but they need to.
Yeah.
And that's also the reason why less is not so popular.
They don't know that they need it.
Yes, so the management comes to you and they have in mind what they actually expect from consultants and framework. And then you say, you shouldn't be asking that. You should be asking this. And then you think like, who are you to tell me what I should ask?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, in that way, do you also see companies adopting less, but then like going back to their old ways? Like, is it kind of like a diet? You have to really work at it to maintain it? Or does it become second nature and there are not many pitfalls?
Most of less adoptions fail.
Okay.
And
because this is a bold statement. Yeah.
Yes.
Might be the trainer or.
Yeah, it's a fact. It's quite also understandable why. The real change in large companies, corporates, is hard. Is really, really, really hard. If any trainer in any kind of a framework says it's not hard, they are bullshitting. So it's bringing real agility in large corporates, it's just really hard. And so chance of succeeding or making a difference, not succeeding because that doesn't really mean anything, making a positive difference is not very high. And a chance of making a sustainable positive difference is even harder.
Yeah.
And what happens is that I've had obviously number of less adoptions, and some of them had incredible good result, and they published like a you can look it up. There are several of them, and so the. But then what happens is that after some time, Some manager, top manager is hired from another company, or the rest of the organization didn't really get the message properly. And there's something funny needs to happen. And they suddenly start to look at teams and they say, who's responsible here for this? And then you answer back, teams. And they say, that can't be true. That's impossible. It has been possible for the past 10 years.
Hmm.
And no, they don't believe that. And this is nonsense. I need to have a single person responsible for it because now it doesn't go well. And then it started to destroy the whole thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And just to give you an example, but I can give you countless examples like that. And not to mention, this is actually still, I consider, successful adoption because it has been successful for a number of years. And then at some point, people start to destroy it again. A bit less successful, but still okay, is that you try to bring the change and then organization gets simplified. You end up in a struggle, basically, where it's kind of a halfway through, and this struggle kind of drags on, and which is quite often that they try to do less, but then you're hitting the boundary of a project management office, which has a different way of looking at things, and then until you kill the project manager office, takes a long time. And then you, it makes it much better if the organization is in an urgent situation. They notice that the project management office doesn't really work at all, and then they are more willing to change.
I feel like a fanboy now, but I really do think you want to check up on the stuff that Niels Vlaeging wrote or listen to the podcast that we published earlier. I think it will actually ring a bell with you. Is it because it's not just about the technical side of things or the development side of things? It's actually about how do you make this happen for a whole organization, every discipline. I think you will actually love it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So I can check it out. What I do notice is that quite often what we consider less has happened without people even knowing. Or, it's kind of like I shouldn't be using even the word less or label less. The same optimizing goals are being achieved. Let's put it that way.
Right.
So they are obviously much more than only less trainers who use systems thinking, lean thinking, concepts like end-to-end teams, etc. So this is much more widespread. And so the more common this is, the more it's actually, we talk about very similar things.
Yeah. Okay. And, I had one more question because you kind of mentioned managers already, and managers do have some sort of a spot in less, maybe not no concrete roles, but they are allowed, so to say. I think the less rules explicitly mention the concepts of go see, stop and fix, and experiments over conformance.
Yep.
And I was just wondering if you could maybe shed some light on these concepts. What do they mean, and how do you go about doing those things?
Okay, let me take another soju, and my head is getting red because of it. I noticed in the camera.
The conversation is just getting better. It's fine.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. The more I drink, the better it becomes. Trust me. So the role of a manager is to look at the whole system and improve the system. Which is system, I don't mean IT system. I mean, basically the software, people, processes, policies, structure, etc.
Yeah.
So the what happens is that I'm going back to the page where you describe go see, stop and fix. Okay. And so the what's the role of a, what does a manager do on a day-to-day basis? And most of the time, available time, a manager should be spending being in the teams. Why in the teams? To see what's really happening, and then if not the teams, then it should be looking at how product is being used. We call this a Gemba of value consumption and Gemba of value creation. So the place where the value is created or the place where value is consumed.
Right.
And why would you do that? Because then you can truly understand what's really happening, which is so superior to any kind of a reporting or talking to the people you trust, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you truly see what's really happening. The same applies to me as a consultant or a coach. The same applies to Scrum Masters. The first thing which I do when a company asks me, can you come and help us and maybe introduce less or whatever, I say, I'm going to spend a sprint with your team. And then get into not only the events that they're running, but actually sit with them and code together and solve bugs or whatever, deal with some kind of a software which is developed by external partner, whatever. Then you start to really see what's going on. And every time I get pleasantly surprised amount of information that I get from even a single day spending with doing that. So you wonder how come that what I see, developers don't see themselves. Obviously they do, but my advantage is that I see them from a different eyes and from a different perspective. My perspective is a system and their perspective is day-to-day dealing with a bloody vendor which doesn't produce software they should be using, blah, 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 in a proper way.
Yeah.
So, and I look again immediately the whole dynamic that happens there. Same with the manager. The manager should be sitting there to observe how system behaves and not to judge people, not to micromanage, obviously, not to et cetera, but to really understand what's really going on without judgment, just pure understanding. They should be spending much more time doing that. And if the more managers do that, the better decisions they make. So decisions should be based on actual observation, not on reports.
All right, cool.
Yeah, stop and fix. That's just simply one of the behaviors. Once you see what's really going on, you realize that it's truly pointless to build a feature if you do not automate the tests, for example.
Yeah.
And it's truly pointless to keep pushing on teams all kinds of new stuff while they're having a Jira list of issues 1,000.
So the stop and fix thing is literally about like bugs or like technical stuff, or can it also be team dynamics that are that are out of whack?
Yeah, that could be too. So for example, I heard one story of a company which where they on a top level management said, that's a really good decision. They said, okay, I want everybody to stop working on whatever they work, and you're going to spend now time working on purely learning. So choose whatever you want to learn, learn, don't deliver anything with literally anything, nothing at all. Just don't do anything which comes related to the product. And then they said, we're going to do one thing and one thing only. I want one thing to be delivered. And so who can contribute to that? And then if few people could contribute to that, the rest couldn't contribute. And you say, if you can't contribute, don't do anything. Just sit and wait, okay? And then he made sure there is a work in progress limit of zero. And then he said, it's going to stay zero. And if you cannot contribute, that's okay. You get paid still your salary. And then slowly they build from there. It's always zero. Work in progress should be zero. And then things started to flow. Okay, but before that, nothing was flowing. Everybody was busy.
Yeah.
To give you an example.
Yeah. It requires a lot of faith, though.
It requires, first and foremost, requires knowing, seeing what's really happening. Because without that, you can't have faith. I mean, it's not a religion. So you have to see it. You have to see the evidence. You have to see the dynamics. You have to feel it. Only then you have the courage to say, okay, I need to really stop this machine because it's not going anywhere, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can't remember who said it, but like if you're producing stuff that no one needs, you're just creating waste, basically. And that's probably even worse than doing nothing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. So yeah, that I think was the questions that I had. I don't know, Sylvester, did you have any...
No, I'm still thinking about it. I think the main thing for me is, and I think that's also partly what you're telling me between the lines, is there's more to less than well, the core framework, right? That's not per se the main thing. It's about the practices, how do you deal with things, how do you deal with people and the values.
Yeah.
I like that. And I see a lot of links to other talks we had in the last few months.
Yeah,
so there
sure.
must be something to it, right? I'm seeing trends here and there pop up. That's not about, control. It's more about, hey, organize yourself, manage yourself. So, yeah, I like it. I'm going to dive more into it.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Thanks, Victor.
Yeah, for me, the same. Welcome. Like, definitely feels like something that I would like to try at one point, for sure.
Good.
Yeah. Good. Do you maybe have some questions for us? Or
you say that probably to every single framework, right?
No, I don't know.
Just kidding.
I wasn't allowed to be at the Safe podcast, so no.
No, I mean, for sure, this is like, it's been enlightening for me at least. Like I said, I've never used or seen Les working at a company, but the way that you explain it makes a lot of sense. And it also shows that you don't have to do Les to grasp some of the concepts, because like you said, some companies actually do a lot of these things without really knowing that it's part of Les.
Correct.
So it's a natural...
Correct. I see. I mean, we keep saying less, but in my mind, it's nothing else than a label to a bunch of tools and toolboxes. Yeah. So all my focus is at the toolbox and a way of thinking about organizational tools, and we should be having discussion about that. And that's the key thing. So less is a handy label. That's it. That's how I see it in my mind. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then if there's no other questions, then I would like to thank Victor very much for joining in.
You're welcome. And if you have more questions or want to approach, you want to get involved in the community, by the way, there is also Les Slack community. And so if you want to get involved there, just drop me a message, approach me, and for you also, but for others also who listen to this. And I can get you involved, and you can then ask much more questions about it.
Yeah, we can put the contact information in the description here. Or I guess they can reach out on LinkedIn to you as well, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we'll link to that one as well. All right. Well, thanks again very much. It was enlightening. Sylvester, thank you as well.
Thank you all for being the host once again.
Yeah, man, I didn't hear you cough one time. So
I'm good with the mute button here.
But yeah, all right, pretty good. And as always, I also want to thank the listener for joining in again. If you guys have any questions about Les to Victor, you can also you can send him a message, of course. But if you're more comfortable talking to us, that's fine as well. Or if you have any suggestions, you can also send us an email at podcast@4scouts.nl or reach out on Twitter, 4scouts. Victor, do you have a Twitter?
Yes.
Should be
your
link.
Yeah,
right.
We can.
We'll link to that one as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's it for today then. Thank you very much, and see you guys later. Bye bye.
Soju. Bye bye.
Soju.
Yeah.